What's up, y'all? My name is Ian Edwards, and welcome to the Soccer Comic Rant. And we are knee deep into the World Cup. Actually, neck deep. It's the semifinals, and we're going to kind of talk about the two matches coming up this week and see who we feel will persevere in both matches. We'll talk about Gio Reyna's trouble, and we'll ask ourselves, should Southgate continue or should he just bow out gracefully and be seen as a really surprising coach that didn't wear out his welcome as England coach? But we'll get into it. We got some of the usual suspects. We got Neil Chakrabarty, stand-up comic, Chelsea fan. What up, Neil?
I'm good. Good. It's a great World Cup week.
Why is it a great World Cup? There's no goals. There's no games.
No, I mean, it was a great week because I think we got to see some good games and we didn't get to see just the usual suspects go through.
Yeah, good games, painful results.
Yeah.
And then we got Lee Hudson, stand-up comic from England, Southampton fan. Another regular. What up, Lee?
I'm all good. It's feels like this tournament's gone quickly. We're almost there. It's semi-final time.
It's like the longest tournament and the shortest tournament at the same time. Because when you sleep deprived for like 17 days in a row, I think that's how long the first group like lasted. It does like wear and tear on you. What's the vibe in England since England lost? Like, what's going on?
I think a lot of people, I mean, people are obviously disappointed and, you know, sad that the team went out. But I think no one is really pointing any fingers and saying that, you know, the team played badly. There's no real, like, I've heard mixed things on the manager. Don't want to get into that now or later on. So I think people are genuinely think it was a good performance and that we were a little bit unlucky. Haven't seen too much hate towards Kane, which you know, he plays for Spurs. He's already got it bad enough. Let's not hammer the poor guy. but you know, one day that penalty is going to come down somewhere and land. So, but no, it was a valiant performance.
I think he kicked it hard enough for it to never land. So,
still rising. the general. Sorry, go on.
I said it'll probably catch up with Sputnik. You know what Sputnik is?
Yeah, ball's going to bounce off it. but no, the general mood is that, you know, England played well, unlucky to go out in the circumstances they did. So yeah, it's a disappointed, but not like enraged right. Kind of vibe.
Happy losers.
Yeah, if you can call it that. And most people, that is. There's obviously a few who, I think a lot of England fans realistically looked at the tournament though at the start and looked at the bracket and where things could potentially sort of work their way through. And a lot of people went, we probably get France in the quarters. We'll probably go out. So I think like hitting the quarterfinals and losing to France was like meeting expectations. We didn't fall short of expectations. We didn't exceed expectations. We were about where we should be.
That's weird that everybody was so rational, because that makes sense. It's like you're up against the world champs. Their team on paper does seem to be better than ours. But I guess what helped also is the way we played. Like we played competitively. Like I just watched the game again and we really put it to them. And there were so many opportunities to score that I realized from watching it again. And again, Harry Maguire, take some head in practice. Every game, whether it's for England or Manchester United, he gets a chance to score and the ball goes wide or it gets saved or over the post. And it's like, bro, take some head in practice. you know, and you can get some more goals. You're always getting to the ball, so just get to it right. My question is, so about England, and then we'll go to the Southgate thing later on in the podcast. So Harry Kane takes two penalties. He misses one. He scores one, right? Now, a lot of people, especially like even the British media, which has gotten better, just period. So that kudos to them for that. You got to give people credit for getting better. But if that was a black player who had missed that penalty, like, would the country, like, where was the racist outrage against Harry Kane online? And I'm glad there was none, but whatever love you show Harry Kane in his toughest moments, I would like that love for like Rashford and and Saka and was it Sancho last year when they took those penalties? But also those penalties were in a final. This is a penalty in a quarterfinal in the middle of a game where there's still time left. So does that change things? Or is it like the fact that people, like, why did Harry Maguire kind of get off? And even I let him off, you know? But is there a reason? Is this a color thing? Or is it because it's a quarterfinal versus a final? Like, why is everybody overall like, he's a good guy?
It's 100% a color thing. Like, you know, racists love an opportunity to be racist, and when it's Harry Kane, they don't have an opportunity to be racist. That's why, you know, those pieces of shit during the Euros, they came out of the woodwork because it gave them an opportunity to be racist. And I like to think there's enough, like, I think that was a minority here that did that. The majority of people, you know, Saka, he got you know, standing ovation from the fans at Brentford on the first day of the season when Arsenal went and played there. I think most people,
it's beautiful,
most like decent people, you know, were behind them, and most decent people, Harry Kane. But it just, the fact that it was Harry Kane and he's white means the racists don't have an opportunity to be racist, which yeah, I mean, they're still out there. I don't think those people are going to change. They're, you know, they're shitty people, and it just meant they didn't have an opportunity to exercise their shitty beliefs under the disguise of football.
Right. And I can't just, you know, even though I asked the question that way, I remember, like, you go back a bunch of World Cups back to when Beckham didn't even really foul Simeone and he got the red. And there were nooses and everything to the point where he had to go have a child in America. You know, so it's like, was it that people hated Beckham more than they hate Harry Kane? Is it because Beckham's life?
Yeah.
Like that, he's handsome. He's got swag. He got the dope wife. He played for Manchester United. Was it like the country's hate? Like, there's so many variables to like why some people, even if it's different, even if the same race, get certain shit and some don't. So what's your comment on that, Neil?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely his lifestyle, right? And that was around the time, I think 98 was around the time before the whole, he was still a little bit unproven at club level, right? So he wasn't the Beckham of the 99 treble winning team. He was just a young kid who's had like a year, season or two of breakthrough football. So I think there was a lot of that, and, you know, he's good looking, tattoos, piercings. So there's definitely a lot of that. And
like, he could sleep with most of the guys in the media. Is like, he could sleep with my girl. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, most of the guys around the country too.
Yeah.
So, and Harry Kane, you know, he's never going to be, I mean, the biggest off the, you know, off the pitch wrong thing I've seen in, like, you know, wrong thing, because at the end of it's my opinion, was that Harry Kane interview with Gary Neville, that he gave literally almost, you know, doing a come get me Manchester City interview throwing his boyhood club, you know, one of his boyhood clubs under the bus.
One of them.
But he got absolutely, like, I think it was a week of criticism, but he got absolutely no residual criticism or, you know, hate off of it, which, again, I think definitely race is a factor, but it's also the fact that he is one of those, you know, good guys.
Yeah.
He has that kind of a clean profile. But I was also looking at Instagram, and I think I may be wrong, but I think Rashford got more hate for missing the free kick than Harry Kane got for missing the penalty.
So, you know what's funny? Like, I saw that free kick, and there's a joke in my mind. I was like, I bet you wouldn't it be funny if everybody hated on Rashford for that free kick that just barely grazed the post and hit the back post that helps the goal stand up. And so that's funny that you... That is bananas.
Yeah. It absolutely is. And so, I mean, here's the thing. I think England played really well. This is probably the best game of football I've seen England play at a World Cup in my living memory, because this is against a top team. It was against a team that's full of world-class individuals and who've won a World Cup, have been finalists at the Euros. So they know how to get this done. And it came down to the absolute tightest of margins. Like, that free kick, you'd back Harry Kane to score that, you know, 99 times out of 100. And you would, like, even the winner that Giroud scored, at the end of the day, that was, maybe, you know, Stones could have gotten tighter to the man, and Harry Maguire could have probably, you know, gotten his head ahead. But you still lost out to a header from one of the most elite headers of a ball in the last 5 to 10 years. Like, it doesn't get better than Olivier Giroud, with that aerial presence. So, yeah, there's not a lot you can actually say bad about even Brazil. I thought, you know, they made one mistake. England, I think, they were there. They made it really competitive, and the performance wise, they were slightly better than France on the day.
Slightly.
I just
rewatched it. I don't want to be biased, but we pretty much had our way with them, except we didn't put the ball in the net. Like, it was pretty impressive. I was watching it again to the point that when the game ended, I was like, it was like when the whistle blew. Like, I was in shock that we didn't win again. It's almost as if, like, I was seeing it for the first time. Like, it was pretty impressive, man. Jude Bellingham, like, Henderson.
That midfield, I mean, they ran the show and especially the way they came out after the second half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a big boy performance.
Yeah. And even the first half, like, France scored like 16 minutes in. Mm-hmm. And after that, so England had a 5-minute spell at the beginning of the game. They were in control. Then France had one. Then there was England took it back. And then there was a foul on Saka that wasn't called. And then France comes down. And then they score. And then after that, England was trying to get that goal back. And then France had some counter chances in between that. But England just got comfortable after that goal scored, and they just went for it in a way that you're like, yes, this is the England you want to see. The only thing unfortunate is, like, this is the first game in the World Cup that England went down and we didn't win. But I'd back this team in America in, what is it, 2026? Yeah, I back this team hard.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see the evolution of the team now, and which players move on from the team, which players stay. Obviously, you know, there's a core of really talented young players who should be at the next few tournaments, you know, the likes of Bellingham, Foden, Saka, people like that. You know, these guys are exciting young players who, yeah, should be able to play for tournaments and tournaments. So, the future's definitely bright. Just one thing as well I wanted to touch on. We mentioned Beckham of France 98. I mean, the British media are still horrific. They're still not they're still not great, but they really whipped up a frenzy when Beckham got sent off. Like, they turned him into like public, and they fully leaned into what happened and almost encouraged it. I mean, I'm just looking at, I've brought up some of the old headlines. Like the front page of the Daily Mail said, "Moment of lunacy that costs cup hopes." The Daily Mirror is like, 10 heroic lions, one stupid boy. And they even had a David Beckham dartboard with his face as a bullseye. You know, stuff like that, which is just really irresponsible journalism.
Especially, it's not even journalism at that point.
No, it's not.
This is somebody in their room. This is like the internet before the internet.
Yeah.
People say, who are these people who from the internet who are writing these things now? And it's like, oh, it's the same guys from back then before the internet. Like, they gave them jobs. Yeah. And the ones that didn't get jobs are writing shit on the internet now. It's like, that's crazy. That's super irresponsible.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty terrible. And like I say, he was an easy target back then as well because of his, you know, celebrity lifestyle and everything. And people just saw him as that, you know, arrogant, fancy boy kind of thing. And it'd be like, oh, you know, let's really go after him. And yeah, I mean, I'd hate to see what would have happened if, you know, Rashford and Saka and Sancho had missed those penalties in that era. Like, could have been even could have been even worse, because I mean, that media had no real oversight, and they
English team was so racist back then, they didn't really let a lot of black players like on the team. So in the reverse way, it kind of saved a lot of black players.
Because
I was like, why isn't Ian Wright playing more? Or why isn't why wasn't Cole playing more? You know what I mean? Like, I know there were other English forwards, but like, why weren't they? But if they had, and I'm sure they wanted to, if they messed up at any moment, they might not be alive right now. Jesus.
Yeah,
that's crazy back then. There's always some level of craziness, no matter what point in time we're at. But let's go to the World Cup, man. Semifinals. What do you guys feel? Argentina versus Croatia. Who wants to go first?
I mean, I can go first on this one. It's I think it's going to be. It's hard to see what sort of game this is going to be, or it might be almost like multiple games within one. Because on the one hand, both teams have some really technically gifted players. That midfield battle, I think, is going to be immense in this game. You know, Croatia, they got Modric, they got Kovacic, they got Brozovic, sort of three midfielders who are all quite technically talented and, you know how each other plays in there. Argentina as well, they've got, you know, some really good players in there as well. You know, Paredes, De Paul, people like that. Obviously, Messi might be playing in a sort of number 10 role for them. It's, you know, there's some really technical players all over the pitch. For these guys, but equally, both teams have got, you know, the tendency to, if they need to go sort of really, I'm trying to think of the best way to say it, but scrappy. Like, both teams can turn it into a war if they want as well. You know, we saw with Paredes when he came on in the Netherlands game, when he smashed the ball into the bench and then took a body check off Van Dijk and sparked a, you know, bench clearing brawl. and they just got players who will do that. Even Messi's like playing with a bit of an edge to him at this World Cup as well. He had that little beef with Van Gaal at this game as well and stuff like that. So
I heard that some of that beef goes back to Riquelme.
It might well do, yeah. Wouldn't surprise me.
But I'll tell you what that was. I'll see if I can remember, but sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. And Croatia are just one of those teams. Like, Croatia, you know, like I said, they've got technically gifted players, but they've also got players who will do anything it takes to win. They got players who will shit house if they have to. You know, they got experienced players who knows what it takes to get inside the heads of an opponent and to grind something out. I feel like Argentina are maybe a little bit more lightweight than Croatia in this one. They've got players who can get nasty, but I think they're a little bit more emotional than, I think Croatia will be a little bit more calculated with how they do it. But you know, we'll see. I think it could be a really good game of football. It could be a really ugly game of football. I'm not sure how it's, I think it's got the potential to be both. Cause it's such a big occasion. I think the ugliness might take over. But I hope it's a good game to watch.
I mean, if it gets ugly, the ugliness suits Croatia, you know?
Mm.
But so going into the World Cup, you know, because I just love football, sometimes it's not that my allegiance switches. It just means that, you know, whoever's is the best footballer sometimes just has my heart. So, you know, going into the World Cup, I'm rooting for England, but there's this thing where I want Ronaldo to get his. There's this thing where I don't want people to ever doubt that Messi was one of the best players we ever saw in the world, because if he doesn't win a World Cup, they're going to throw that in his face. And it's like, no, this guy was it, like, for a long ass time. So you can't. Yeah, I know normally winning a World Cup is a standard, but this is it. But then the World Cup, and then there's France. You know, like, I was always a Paul Pogba fan, and he wasn't on the French team. And then, but they still had one of the best teams. And then they start doing their thing. And I'm like, I don't know. For some reason, I like France, you know? And I've always liked them from the days of Tigana and, you know, and those guys, you know? So I'm like, if we don't win, then they win. But now that we got to the quarterfinals, there's some people and some teams that just came out of nowhere that are playing football. And because the love is of football, like, they kind of like stole some of like the things that I had for the people originally that I had the things for. So maybe this is an emotional thing, but you said Croatia can get dirty. And if it gets dirty, and they can do that, but they can also both, Croatia can also play with like style. And you know how Argentina loses it? Croatia is just ice cold, and they know they can't afford to lose it. You know, like they control their emotions more. Like, they really know what the moment is. And I think when somebody, like, they're talking about how Messi is using this anger, and anger is like a thing of like desperation, and Croatia is not playing desperate. They're just playing determined. And I feel like they are the most determined team in this game tomorrow. And they have the quality, and they can get dirty, or they can play real football. And they've been here before recently. Argentina did get to the finals another World Cup ago before. But overall, Croatia's just been playing better. I'm just going to tell you who they played. I could go through the list of teams that they played, but just the fact that they beat Brazil when they were 1-0 down. And then Argentina, yeah, they beat the Netherlands, but it's the Netherlands. It ain't like, you know, there's like three spots on the field where the Netherlands are really good. And that's like Van Dijk, maybe Aki area, the De Jong area. And then if Memphis Depay doesn't show up, then they really don't got it. So I'm not putting down Argentina's win against Netherlands. The Netherlands are dangerous, and it was a close match, but Croatia just beat Brazil. And that is huge. That is just so huge. And I just keep thinking about the Champions League, PSG versus Real Madrid when Modric, like, they're down. The same guy who was down, was it 3 goals to PSG? Was it 3-0? And then they came back and that they won that game. Or was it 2-1? I can't remember the score. But the same Modric hunted down Messi, slide tackled him, and he's going to be there against Messi. Like, he has no fear. His teammates have seen him do this, and they feed off his lack of fear, and they get ice water in their veins. So I got to give the slight edge to Croatia for tomorrow. Neil, what you got?
I don't know why you guys are doubting the Lionel Messi testimonial journey.
like, oh, that's why you was making those faces when I was talking. All right.
I mean, like, you know, it seems like for like a lot of neutrals, I'm seeing like everybody's willing Messi on, because as you said, you know, this is the one last checkbox he needs to tick. Like, and I kind of think the opposite. I kind of feel like it'd be great if you can't check it off, so we can keep having these conversations. Like, you don't want the slam dunk, right? Like, right now, Mbappe has won the World Cup, but he's yet to win a Champions League, so you can still talk shit about that. So, but yeah, I mean, I think it's very even, because even though Argentina has more firepower, like, they do have up front, you know, the caliber of Messi, Lautaro Martinez, like Dybala, if he comes on, and
Di Maria. I forgot to mention Di Maria. Is an X factor.
Yeah. So they do have, you know, on paper a better team and more quality. But Croatia, I mean, they just keep it tight and compact, and they kind of hedge their bets that way. That, you know, the longer the game goes, we can just by sheer drive, we can. Because some of these flair teams, as the game goes on and it keeps getting tight and tight, they can, you know, get frustrated and make errors. And it was kind of what we saw, like the whole Brazil-Croatia thing. I just don't know what Brazil was doing, conceding a counterattack in the 117th minute of a quarterfinal, World Cup quarterfinal. I mean, I actually think Brazil played a great game, because Croatia did make it very difficult for them to score. And they created a lot of chances, a lot of big chances. And the keeper, even the shots were, you know, they were good shots. The keeper really had one of the games of his life. But you did that. You finally went past that hurdle. You got that goal, right? Like, Neymar worked his magic. And he worked that goal. And now you're 4 minutes plus stoppage time away from semi-final spot. I can understand any sort of goal, like, but how do you concede a counter-attack? That means you are committed more in attack than in defense, which I think is a huge, huge mistake.
It seemed like it was a counter-attack caused by a tackle by a Brazilian player.
I think Antony lost the ball.
Here's my thing. It's like, if you're that coach, right? And why would you put in Fred over Bruno Gomes?
Yeah.
Like, that's the substitution. Like, I know Fred wins the ball, but so does Bruno Gomes, and he has just more skill. You could just tell.
Also, I think Fabinho was on the bench, and he didn't come on. Like, if you're trying to close out a game, you know, that's the kind of substitution you'd probably make.
Fabinho's been looking suspect for, you know, the only person that gets more shtick from Liverpool than Trent Alexander-Arnold is like the way Fabinho's been playing, like, recently, because they burned him out playing central. They had him playing defense that year when the entire Liverpool defense was burned. Yeah. And then they have him coming back into holding CDM. And I think that shit just wore him out.
But you still picked him in the team, right? So, of course, you see some value in how you get in getting him to Qatar. So,
yeah,
just use him. Like, that's the kind of
Nobody's starting Fred over Fabinho. You're right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, Yeah, I found it. I think that's the only criticism I had of Brazil. And that's my point. Like, you know, teams like Croatia, they're very quick to pounce upon such mistakes. And they don't mind waiting. They'll wait till the 88th minute for you to make a mistake. they're fine. They're going to keep waiting. So I think Argentina, the advantage that they do have in terms of flair and creativity, they need to make that count before it gets to the point where Croatia is like, all right, now we can Brentford this thing. Like,
yes. If you're Croatia and you played Brazil, you're like, we can beat Argentina.
Yeah.
We just beat Brazil.
Mm.
Like, there's no reason. So they're definitely going in there with no doubt, full confidence. Mm. Yeah. And they're like, the same type of like way they controlled and waited and were patient and disciplined against Brazil, they can do that against Argentina. Like when I look at who Argentina's played, they haven't played a team like this, you know? So, I mean, listen, I'm just going to have to defend. If Argentina loses, I'm just going to have to defend Messi as one of the greatest players in the world without a World Cup, because right now my allegiance
gonna be
has changed.
That's going to be tough. Can you imagine the headlines? Messi couldn't even, like, he had a clear pathway to the final and he couldn't do it against Croatia.
I mean, so, you can't sleep on this Croatia team.
No, I know. And you know, Croatia, they're going to dominate that midfield. Like, when you talk about controlling games, they have pretty much the perfect midfield to cause even the best teams trouble. So, yeah, it's going to be a good game. Like, I definitely feel that Argentina are favorites going into this game just because of what they can do at the top of the pitch. Yeah. So, but, you know, Croatia, they've been there. They've been to a World Cup final. This exact set of players have been to a World Cup final. So, yeah, they can do it again.
Do you have anything else to say on this game, Lee?
It'd be interesting, you know, to see if we can get a replay of the last World Cup final. I don't know if that's ever happened, where the same two teams have played the World Cup final back to back. But like Neil says, they've been there before. You know, they've got the experienced players who've been at the tournaments. They've got newer, good younger players like Gvardiol. I thought was probably one of the best players on the pitch against Brazil. The young defender from Leipzig, the 20-year-old who played with the mask on. I thought he was immense in that game. You know, you've got him playing alongside.
He should always keep that mask, even when he's better.
Like, that's his got magical powers.
But
you know, there's players who I hadn't seen much of previously on the Argentina team who I thought, you know, were very good. You know, I didn't know much about Molina before, but you know, the way he ran onto that pass from Messi.
How did Messi even see that pass?
Because he's Messi.
I guess that's the answer. That's a good answer.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was crazy. And you know, it's lucky a teammate saw that pass as well, that you could get on the end of it, because everyone was looking in a different direction. I think the players were all expecting something else, and then for him to just reverse that pass the way he did through that gap, you know, that was just classic Messi. But I've said it before as well with Brazil, where it's crazy where you look at Brazil and it's like, oh, one of their starting midfielders plays for West Ham. Like, that's not the Brazil I grew up watching, where they have a West Ham player centre midfield. And with Brighton, they've got Alexis McAllister. They've got a Brighton.
And Argentina.
Yeah, they got a Brighton midfielder for Argentina. So it's still quite surreal to see like players from clubs like that involved with national teams like that. But, you know, I like Alexis McAllister. I think he's been very good in the Premier League for Brighton. He's a good set piece taker as well. Not that he's going to get near any free kicks with Messi in the team.
But who would it, like, just staying on Brighton a little bit? Like you said, Brazil has a Brighton player. Is that what you said?
West Ham. They got Paqueta.
Right. And then Argentina has one. And then Belgium got one. And then Japan got one. Like, Brighton Hove got more people in the fucking World Cup. Like, Brighton Hove.
They had half the Ecuador team.
that is crazy. Like Brighton Hove, sometimes they play the World Cup and the American League continues because it's playing at the same time. But Brighton Hove, if it was in the MLS, it would be like, hey man, we can't play.
Yeah, their goalkeeper was one of the backup keepers for Spain as well. Robert Sanchez, I think he was in there. Yeah, because obviously they played Simon, isn't it? I think it was the starting keeper. But Robert Sanchez was one of the backups. So yeah, they've had a lot of players involved in this. Yeah, Trossard. A lot of Mitoma. Is it the Japanese? Was he the Japanese forward they had?
Yeah, Mitoma. Yeah. When he came on, you had problems.
Yeah, he played well. And then Stupinan and Casado and one more who I forget the name of for Ecuador as well. They had three guys in the Ecuador squad.
That is pretty crazy. Brighton Hove, whole squad is in the World Cup. good luck, Chelsea, because you stole their recruiting. So y'all should be good.
Let's not go there.
don't worry about it. Like I watched two Manchester United mid-season games, and we lost both of them. But we have a lot of young players that I didn't know that we had that play some decent football. It's just that we have 15 players at the World Cup, so of course we're going to lose to Cadiz, and we even played better against Real Madrid, Betis, who's at a high in the Spanish table. I feel you. Because I'm saying that because I sent you that thing that Chelsea lost in a preseason match.
Lee, I just checked. I think the last time two teams played back-to-back World Cup finals was 86 and 1990, Argentina versus Germany.
Oh, shit.
So Argentina won the first time and Germany next time.
Oh, yeah. Maradona.
Yeah, Maradona 86.
So I'm going to say this. I'm going to talk about the other semifinal, right? So one team in the next semifinal, they drew with Croatia. They beat Belgium 2-0. They beat Canada 2-1. They beat Spain. And they beat Portugal. And the other team is France. Isn't that crazy? What a resume. What a last five-game resume. Like, there is, besides the injuries that Morocco, because they're falling up, they're playing so hard above their level, their players are falling apart in the middle of the game. But this is a better resume than France has this World Cup.
The crazy thing is, as well, they've only conceded one goal the whole World Cup, and that was to Canada.
And that was an own goal.
Yeah.
So they have conceded, nobody has scored on them. They tied with Croatia, who is in the semifinals. Yeah. They beat Belgium, who has the golden generation, Canada 2-1, Spain, who was like, started the tournament on fire, and then Portugal with their roster of talent. And now it's like, why would you fear France? Like, you've played teams on the level of France, teams that people thought could beat France. And now you got France, and then you got this history beyond football with France. And a lot of the players there were born in France. And it's like almost like I never made it to where I could have. And it's like, I want to prove to y'all that I should have got further. And it's just like, this is, it's like Croatia is white Rocky and Morocco is is North African Arab Rocky, and they're going against France. Who do you guys think got this?
I mean, you got to go France as favorites. I mean, just the sheer quality they have, but you can't. You know, it's a semi-final of the World Cup. Morocco have earned their right to be there. Like we said, they're so solid defensively. I don't know if Saïss will be fit for them because he had to go off. Yeah. And he's been a big reason why they've been keeping clean sheets. Obviously, they've still got other guys at the back. They've got Bono in goal, who's been maybe the keeper of the tournament so far, along with Livakovic for Croatia. So, you know, he's going to be tough for France to get past. I think it depends. A lot depends on the mentality, because this is uncharted territory for Morocco now. You know, first African team to ever reach this stage of the tournament. You know, it depends whether or not the fact that they've got this far fires them up even further, because you watch those guys and they, you know, they'll die for the shirt in the other games. And they've got this far, and it depends whether the situation maybe overawes them a little, the occasion. Whereas France, you know, the players have been there and done it. Because I think, you know, even though they didn't play amazing against England, France, you could see in the big moments, the big players stepped up. You know, Giroud had that chance and he got there ahead of Maguire. I know it took a deflection off Maguire's shoulder or whatever, but Giroud had the will to get there in front of him, and you know the quality was there on the ball that was put into the box, and Lloris came up big with a couple of big saves in the big moments. You know, they've got players who will do that. You know, Mbappe probably going to be fired up to try and get that golden boot. Hopefully he does. I have a bet on Mbappe I have two bets. I have Mbappe to get the golden boot in France to win the World Cup, and Messi to get the golden boot in Argentina to win the World Cup. So I'm hoping for a France-Argentina final so I can win some money. But, you know, I think Morocco could do it if they step up, because France can easily have an off day. Like I said, I don't think they were amazing against England. They just have big players who turned up in the big moments. And, you know, Morocco, if they as a collective can do what they've been doing this whole tournament and they shut France out defensively, they might require a bit of luck to do so as well. But if they can then hurt them on the counter, who knows? You got to make France favourites, though. But, you know, this World Cup's been crazy. Morocco have earned the right to be there in that semi-final, so you can't count them out completely. But, yeah, I mean, I would expect France to win, but I've expected a lot of things this tournament.
Yeah, exactly. What you got, Neil? What's your opinion on this?
I mean, France... They showed, like, even versus England, even though I don't think they had their best game. I think a lot of individuals, they were not complete. Like, Mbappe had one great moment against Kyle Walker, where he kind of burned Walker and, you know, got to the bad line and made a cross. But other than that, I think he was fairly well dealt with. So, but even in a game like that, you see, like, just two moments of magic and they got those two goals. So that can happen against a Morocco team who you know their entire game is going to be similar to Croatia, like keep it tight at the back and, you know, hope players like Hakimi and Ziyech going forward, they can create some magic, which I think this is probably one of the worst matchups for France, though, because if that team has any, the French team, if they have any weaknesses, it's the fact that somebody like Mbappe, as good as he is on the ball going forward, he offers very little, you know, in terms of support to the fullback going back. And Hakimi and Ziyech can use that. So that'll be really interesting to see, because I thought Walker did a great job with against Mbappe, keeping him quiet. But he almost absolutely gave up his offensive duties to do that. Yeah. So if Hakimi can find that balance in, you know, where he is keeping Mbappe down, but also linking up with Ziyech going forward, I think that'd be a great test of, you know, where Mbappe stands in terms of, like, doing both ends of the pitch. So, I mean, again, it's the same thing as earlier, right? Like you try and double up on Mbappe. They have players like Dembele, Giroud, Griezmann, who again had, I thought, a good game. They can hurt you too. So they just have too many weapons in the armory. But yeah, Morocco, you know, they've done what they needed to do. I think you have all the stats of defensively how good they are. But you see on the other side, going forward, they have, I think, one of the lowest XGs in the tournament. And still, like, they managed to eke out these, you know, close games. So they're, like, I think, again, much like Argentina, France also, they'll have to make their dominance count early on in that first half. Because once this game gets, you know, closer to the 90th minute, then anything can really happen.
Yeah. Morocco, it's not that the balls that they play with and the determination and the desire, but then you realize how individually gifted some of the members are. Yeah. And it just shows up in moments when you're like, oh shit, like they have that too. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and it's not even always from the players you expect. It's from people whose names I can't even pronounce, like doing moves and getting out of these tight ass spaces. And they're always making me like look at them and wonder and be like, how come you're not playing on a weekly basis in a league that you know, that's in one of the top leagues that I can see you?
I mean, Amrabat, I think he will, you know.
He's in Fiorentina.
He's going to get a contract pretty soon.
Fiorentina can name their price, yeah. Fiorentina on him. They've got to be, whoever's doing the finances at Fiorentina has got to be rubbing their hands together after his performances. Because, yeah, I'm sure they want to keep him, but also they know that they can get big, big bucks for him now off the back of this tournament. And I mean, En-Nesyri, the guy who scored against Portugal, I mean, that's no mean feat to get up and dominate Ruben Diaz in the air like he did, and to score that header the way he did. I think one of the interesting things about Hakimi as well is that he's, you know, he plays against Mbappe every week in training. You know, he knows him. They've been joking, you know, Mbappe's come out and said he's going to destroy him, and Hakimi just said, I'm going to kick him. that'll be a really fun matchup as well. I think, you know, like Walker managed to sort of deal with him. Hakimi's, you know, absolutely rapid. He likes to be a more of an attacking player, but he's got the speed to keep up with him for sure, and he knows him. So, I mean, obviously Mbappe knows him too. So there's that. He'll know his weaknesses as well. So that'll be a really fascinating matchup. Like Neil said, down that one side of the pitch with Ziyech ahead of them as well, as that inverted winger. That'll be interesting. And like you say, they've got players who can pull out decisive match winning moments in that Morocco team. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to watching this one.
Yeah, I'm just going to go for the underdog. You know, I like the French coach, and if he makes it to a semifinal, nobody can say it's a failure for the France team, especially with no Kanté, Pogba, Benzema, and whoever else they're missing. This is still good for this team to get here. Like, Mbappe already got a World Cup. It'd just be great to see. Listen, one of these underdogs, Croatia or Morocco, is going to make it this weekend to the final. Like, at least one of them. So, again, I don't know which one. I know. I forget, Morocco has the toughest prospect, but they also, of all the final quarter semifinalists, I think they have the best World Cup resume going into this, which is a crazy thing to say. But I'm gonna just say Morocco because it's emotional, and
I'd love to see it happen.
This has just been a crazy ass journey for World Cup. And If it's crazy, let's end it crazy. Let's go all the way.
Yeah. Now, also, I think Morocco, just one more thing on Morocco. you see the number of players who, like, you know, who grew up or either born or grew up in other countries from part of the Moroccan diaspora, and how many of them play for Morocco over their, you know, their countries where they grew up. It's kind of unique because every other country, I think they're like trying to get leftovers. Like if you have, you know, if you have somebody from, you know, Ghanaian origin or Nigerian origin in the UK, or even in the Netherlands, they're not going back to Nigeria or Ghana is probably their second priority. If they can't get selected, you know, for where they're at right now. But it seems to be that Morocco, I can't remember a single Moroccan player who plays for a European team, even though almost all the entire team is from players from there. So they're doing something right, like the federation level, they're doing something right where they're convincing these players to, you know, I don't know if that's a cultural mentality thing where they take a little bit more pride in representing their nation. But I mean, those things, I feel like people are the same everywhere. So I guess as a policy, they're doing something right where they're going out, getting these people in the door before they can get locked in by their, adopted countries. So I think that's a great example to something to learn for a lot of these other countries.
You know how like Belgium has a golden generation, but all their players were born in Belgium. Like Morocco has a golden generation of players that were born in other countries to Moroccan parents. And you know how Argentina, like there's a reason why, somebody told me the reason why, and I don't know if this is true, that there's so many Argentinian fans at the game is because the Argentinian Football Federation like pays for these fans to go out there. And it's almost as if the Moroccan government, I don't know if you've ever seen this TV show,
Americans,
about these, they're Americans. They marry these Russian spy couples and send them to America to spy all over America. And I feel like they got these these Moroccan families and said, we're going to pay you to move to England. We're going to pay you to move to France. We're going to pay you to move to Spain and have kids and let those kids
spread the culture, like,
grow up, spread the culture, but also go to these soccer camps and get the best training and then come back here and play for us so that we can win a World Cup. It's almost as if this is this long con chess game to win the World Cup that Morocco set in place 20, 30 years ago.
more to do with France's colonial history, to be honest. Amrabat was born in Holland. He's Dutch.
I think he's played for Holland at the junior level too, much like Ziyech.
Yeah, he played, just having a look, he played under 15s, but then under 17s and under 23s played for Morocco.
He went back to the Morocco head roots early.
It's a good long con, whoever, you know, if they did come up with something. It's kind of like what the Thailand government they did back in a couple of decades ago with Thai food in America. They started sponsoring or subsidizing these people to, you know, open up Thai restaurants. Because you see, like in America, like unlike any other cuisine, you don't really have a big Thai diaspora in America. You very rarely meet people from Thailand, but you have Thai restaurants all over the country. So that was like a cultural soft power play that they did, where they started sponsoring people to, you know, open up
restaurants
in America.
What do you guys think of should we talk about Southgate? Do you think Southgate should stay or roll the dice, go for it, 18 months, the Euros? You got a team that you've started with and grown, and before you were playing conservative football, and then in the World Cup, you started. It's funny, when you're the coach of England, you have to coach to win the game and coach to not get criticized if you lose the game. You have to put contingency plans in, you know, because now some people want to say, oh, he should have been more defensive, but they're saying it like not in a critical way. but they're saying it in a way like, but you know, like Harvey or Harvey, what's his name? He was suggesting it, but taking it back as he said it, that we could have been played more defensive. Even Stevenhausen said that we could have played more defensive, but everybody's always wanted us to be more offensive. And we finally went more offensive, but we went toe-to-toe, mano-a-mano, against one of the best teams in the world. We outplayed them, but we didn't get the goals. And so now Southgate is actually at this point where if he stayed with Jude Bellingham getting more mature and more playing time and Rice and, you know, Calvin Phillips wasn't available, but, you know, this World Cup is hurt. But then you have these other players that are going to add to the mix that could, the team could even be better in 18 months when it comes to Euros. It's like, do you stay or do you roll the dice and risk wearing out your welcome? But you have a really good shot of playing attacking football, the best football England's seen, and actually winning this thing. Because now I think the players are at the point where they believe they can beat the best teams. And that's very important. What would you do if you were Gareth Southgate?
There's been a lot of talk in the media the last sort of 48 hours about his future, and apparently he's weighing it up. Like the FA they're not going to fire him. They don't want him to go. He's got a contract until December 2024, so until after the Euros. But apparently he's sort of undecided in terms of, like you said, there's a good generation of players here. But does he want to see his contract out? But then also apparently he's thinking about, you know, it's taken its toll on him managing England, which it would, because it's a sort of real, you know, sort of fishbowl kind of level of attention on it. And he's come under a lot of criticism, especially during the Nations League, the 4-0 loss to Hungary and stuff. He got a lot of abuse for that. So it's sort of him weighing up the pros and cons, apparently. And, you know, I wouldn't be mad to see him stay. His record in tournaments with England, you can't really argue against it. He's been our most successful tournament manager. Other than Sir Ralph Ramsey, who won the thing, he's been our most successful manager in terms of getting us deep into tournaments, and that's a skill. He's a very good international manager. I'm really intrigued to see whether he can take any of that into club football when he does inevitably move on from the role, whether that's now or whether that's you know, in 2024. You know, I think there's other people who could potentially do a good job, but he has proven that he can do a good job. And then I saw earlier that, you know, the best available English candidates could be Gerrard or Lampard. So I quite hope Southgate stays, to be perfectly honest.
I mean, they mentioned he's not English, but Tuchel. So I don't know if he'd take the job, but yeah, Gerrard and Lampard are not ready for this yet.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, Tuchel and Pochettino are the two foreign names that they've apparently would attempt to go for if they could. Gerrard and Lampard are the domestic names. I saw Rooney mentioned somewhere as well. You know, these are all managers who've not really proven
Rooney's
anything.
Rooney's busy in training camp with Tyson Fury, so he got no time to coach England. He's got a fight in his hand.
Like, you know, the best English managers are in big jobs now that they're probably not going to leave anytime soon unless Chelsea want to sack Potter. But, you know, Eddie Howe's flying at Newcastle as well. Better off waiting for another couple of years and seeing if there's a good English manager out of work by then. Because, you know, Newcastle, then eventually their expectations will probably exceed what Eddie Howe can deliver at some point. And that's the nature of big clubs. Managers don't tend to last more than 2 or 3 years in those roles. So,
yeah, I don't even know why it's a big deal that it has to be an English manager. You just pick the best man for the job, as long as they can speak English and they're not a complete, you know, completely ignorant of, you know, what's been happening with English football in the last 5 to 6 years. So I think that's the key for me. Like, if you do get rid of Southgate, who is the replacement you have in mind? If you get somebody like Tuchel, I would say pull the trigger right now, because 18 months is a good enough period of time. He's definitely an upgrade as a manager. He's proven his credentials as a, you know, as a tournament manager. He's he's worked with some of the players in the current setup. He's played against a lot of these. His teams have played against a lot of players in the current setup. So he has a lot of familiarity there, speaks good English. But yeah, if you have to go down the whole Lampard, Gerrard route, who are again unproven, so you're again, you know, taking shots in the dark, then it's kind of pointless. You might as well stick to Southgate in that case. So, I mean, Southgate's done great. Yeah, you know, as Lee said, best English manager in a long, long time. And, you know, a lot of the criticism that has come towards him, even I've criticized him at times, you know, for just sticking to that three at the back and not, you know, just be having that loyalty towards somebody like Harry Maguire, not letting this really...
Who has shocked me. This has shocked everybody, this tournament. Like, he's not even getting... He's played so good, they're not even killing him for the Giroud header. That's how good of a tournament he's had. That even though he was a guy marking Giroud, and the ball came off his shoulder, he got no stick, like practically nothing. And everybody would love to bury Maguire.
Yeah. I mean, Southgate's got a lot of individuals. Like Jordan Pickford's been actually a world-class goalkeeper at England level for a while now. He's actually saved England a lot of times. So in terms of what Southgate has done and his resume, his record at England, I don't think there's a lot of question marks you can point, even though you can question whether, you know, he lets the team play attacking football. But you've seen Deschamps last, when the one with the French team, he played very, you know, counterintuitive football to the way you think that sort of, you know, group of players should be playing. It was not fast attacking football. So, you know, at the national level, in international football, a lot of teams, you saw what happened with the Brazilian team. Like, they are out of the World Cup right now because they tried to score a goal in the 117th minute where they didn't need to. So it's totally fine for the most part what Southgate's been doing. But yeah, if you can, I just feel it's been a while, you know, as Lee said, like this probably burnout happening from a mental standpoint from Southgate to, like, just to give you a perspective, this was Gareth Southgate's first game in charge. All right. This was his first game in charge in goal, Joe Hart.
Wow.
So that's how long we are going back.
Say no more.
Defense, left back, Ryan Bertrand.
Who?
Ryan Bertrand.
Who the hell is that? He's a soccer player?
Yeah, he's Champions League winner for Chelsea.
Oh, Bertrand, yeah.
Bertrand, you know, he's like Southampton, long-time Southampton player. Where's he right now, Lee?
I think he went to Leicester and he's done nothing. Every player we sold to Leicester recently, because we sold them Yannick Vestergaard as well, and both of their careers have died. I see if Bertrand's still there. Yeah, still at Leicester, apparently. I don't think he's played much.
So
four appearances.
So centre-back, John Stones. So that was a young John Stones back then. And a young Kyle Walker at right-back. Gary Cahill in defence. Wayne Rooney was still in the team.
Damn.
That's how far back. Theo Walcott was in the team. Daniel Sturridge was leading the line. So this has been a generation and a half.
Lingard
was in the team. Yeah, Lingard was, you know, he was. Danny Rose was a first half substitute.
Damn.
You know, Kieran Dyer. Or no, was it Kieran Dyer or maybe Eric Dyer? I'm not sure.
But I think it's Eric Dyer.
Townsend was on the bench.
Jeez. what a gumbo of, like, really the last, all your leftovers in the fridge.
Yeah.
Thrown together to make a meal.
Yeah.
Called the English squad. Yeah, that's not
Antonio.
Antonio?
Yeah, is this guy like, is he, this is before he went to play for Jamaica?
He got some England squads.
He got called up, but he didn't play.
I think he got called up, but he never played. Yeah, that's right. He got called up by Allardyce, so he stayed on, but he never played. So that's how far back he, you know, how this has been a generation and a half of Gareth Southgate managing the England team. So, yeah, just if you can line up somebody like Tuchel, but that's the only thing I'd say. Like, if you can line up somebody like Tuchel, I think this England team has one of the things about Tuchel that he is probably a criticism that he's not good at is he transfer market has always been a problem with him. Either spending too much or not picking the right players. And the sort of the heartache that goes through, you know, trying, you have your first choice locked in and you're for some reason not able to get that guy. What do? You go spend for your plan B or plan C or save the money for another? International football takes all of that, gray area out of the picture, right? You don't have to deal with transfers.
There's no player saying
no, I'm
gonna go back and play for my old country.
Oh yeah.
One day after this.
Yeah.
Because once you play for your country, you play for your country.
Yeah. The owner's not gonna change, like, you know,
yeah. England's not
you don't have to deal with international sanctions by the and a world war. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be exciting if somebody like that comes into the England setup. But I think 18 months is a good period of time.
Yeah, I mean, I would go Tuchel if Southgate wanted to leave. If the only choice is they were going to try to pick an English manager, which would be Gerrard or what's his name at Everton?
Lampard,
like, listen, man, I like those guys, but they ain't ready for this. Mm-hmm. I would pay Southgate extra money to stay if they were determined to have an English coach. I was like, how much do you need, bro? Just and you never have to work after this. You can spend all the time with your family. You'll have enough money to buy your own Premier League team and coach that shit. Just stay, bro. But in Southgate's defense, like, even I've said some stuff, and then other people have said some stuff. So this is what I want to say about Southgate. Yes. So in the tournaments, we've got the lucky draw, right?
Mm.
But then, and then you could say we've only beat in all these tournaments the teams we were supposed to beat. And like, even people like Simon Jordan were saying, like, he didn't do anything against Croatia when we first met them in that semifinals. But when and didn't make the tactical moves to win that game after being ahead. But if you look at that team, and Neil just named some of the people who are probably still there, that was later on. But I bet you the substitute bench was not as strong as now. Mm. So it's like sometimes you're limited by what's on your bench. You know,
Lingard started that game against Croatia in the semifinal.
Yeah, and he was running around and giving up the ball every time he got it. And I don't think there was anything better, any better calls he could make at that time. It's just like, there was no Bellingham. There was no Rice yet.
Phil Foden and Mason Mount were part of, and Ryan Sessegnon were part of three people that Nike took out to watch the World Cup in 2018, you know?
Damn.
So
the people who are starting now.
Right. So, that was a world ago.
Yeah, so that was a world ago. And then if you want to say we haven't beat anybody, in the Euros, we beat Croatia.
And no, you beat Euros, Germany.
We beat Germany.
Yeah.
But then we also beat Croatia, right? Like, we were in the same group.
Yeah.
So you can't dismiss Germany now after we beat them. Like, before we beat them, we hadn't beat them in a minute.
Yeah.
And this was a big moment that the players had to step up and do it. And now we're acting like it's a formality. No, they beat teams that, and then even some of the teams that they did beat that they were supposed to beat, there's been so many tournaments where there are teams like that where England did not beat those teams and we beat them. So I got to give him his respect, and I can see the evolution of the team into like an attacking force. And if he stays, I'm fine with it. And if he leaves and we get Tuchel, I'll be happy to see what Tuchel does with like the potency of this team. But if Gareth stays, I'm down. You know, I'm down 100%.
I think probably also help, like, you know, this World Cup, you actually could see, like, especially the France game, like going down 1-0, previous England teams would probably have kind of, you know, collapsed and, you know, gone away after that at that point. But this team had that belief. So I feel like it's finally getting at this point where this team believes they're not an underdog. So, and I think if you get somebody like Tuchel, that just continues, because that's something he's been really good at, like making a team believe confidence that you're at the top table. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So
also, I feel like England owes Manchester United half the fee for Harry Maguire, because he plays better with them than with us. And we paid for him. Why are we paying for this guy to play better for you? You owe us some money, England. So we should just hit them up and be like, yo, man, we need some of this money, bro. This is one of the best defenders in a tournament for England, and we're paying his fucking salary. Give us pay up, bro. Lee, before we started the podcast, me and Neil was talking about this Berhalter, Gio Reyna situation. So,
yeah,
Neil, do you still have that stuff in front of you?
Oh,
so
yeah.
You like read it and then set the table, and then we just go through it real quick. And then.
So basically, it turns out Berhalter was at a conference. He was speaking at a conference last Tuesday. So it's probably just about... just trying to get that. So he's speaking at a conference for some high performance leadership summit, which is strange because it was on Tuesday. It was probably a couple of days after they were knocked up. So dude just came back and hopped onto a conference. I don't know who scheduled it. Like, were you not expecting to go through?
Damn.
The caveat is this: what has come out now, the quotes are a lightly edited transcript published by the newsletter. So I don't know if this is the exact entirety of what he said. But he essentially talks about a player who was clearly not meeting expectations on and off the field. And essentially, you know, that he's not doing well in training and is being a bit of a baby. So what he said was, as a staff, we sat together for hours deliberating what we were going to do with this player. We were ready to book a plane ticket home. That's how extreme it was. He said that both he and the team's leadership group, a half dozen experienced players, including Captain Tyler Adams, were prepared to send the player home. Instead, the player eventually apologized to the group. And from that day on, there were no issues with this player. Which is ironic, because it's not like Gio Reyna played at any point, like until the last game, he was thrown on at halftime. So, and he, Berhalter, I think at one point also tried to say that he was injured or something. And then Gio Reyna, through his sources, said that no, he wasn't really. So whatever happened in the dressing room, I think Berhalter has kind of gone out of his way to reveal stuff. And that doesn't reflect well on him, I think.
It's definitely a moment of weakness where I feel like he's trying to protect himself. And it's like the I don't know what they call the U.S. men's national team. Like in England, we have the FA. What do they call the American, like, people who hire him?
I think it's U.S. soccer, something like that.
U.S. soccer. Yeah. Like, they already know what happened. And that's all that matters. So, and they probably agree with what he did. Like, so there's probably been a lot of outside criticism that don't know what happened internally. And he had a moment of weakness and was like trying to, like, you're snitching. Like, you don't say the player's name, but everybody knows who you're talking about.
Yes.
To the point where the player has to come out and write. The player who you accused of being childish came out and wrote a more mature response to what you said. And now you look bad, you know?
So it's like,
hey, man, just hold it in. Sometimes as a coach or as a man, you got to hold some shit in. Like, men hold shit in all the time. So this is one of the times. Do it.
And this is, I'm not a big fan of, you know, players, managers taking part in these interviews, books, leadership summits while you're still on the job, because suddenly you're under pressure to provide good content. You're not a YouTube star, all right? So just stick to, you already have a job. Focus on that. Like, earn your money. That's what you're earning money from. Yeah. I mean, at this point, I really hope it is Gio Reyna, because for some
unforeseen reason. No,
yeah, in case it's not. Okay, so yeah, that's good.
He's responded on Instagram.
Yeah, because in the off chance it wasn't, now we suddenly know there's a problem with two players. So that's even worse.
What you got on this, Lee?
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird one to air publicly. It's a bit of a strange one. Because apparently, you know, Berhalter sat him down before the start of the tournament and said, like, your minutes are going to be limited, which I don't think is necessarily the... I mean, I can sort of see why a coach might do that, because then at least they're being upfront and honest with a player, but it's definitely going to demotivate a player, especially a player who, as talented as Reyna is, and would expect to have some more involvement maybe. I think he's a player who maybe the US team needed as well, because, you know, the US team I thought was very functional. They're very hardworking, but they lacked a little bit of quality in the final third at times. You know, there was a lot of weight on Pulisic's shoulders to be the guy. And someone like Reyna could have been a threat for them. But yeah, for your manager to tell you before a World Cup where you expect to be involved, you know, your minutes are going to be limited. Apparently he didn't handle that well. He sort of holds his hands up to that in the statement a little bit as well. He says, you know, it took him a few days to get over it. And why wouldn't you? Like, it seemed like they sprung it on him like right at the start of the tournament, but maybe it was a conversation that should have happened a little bit earlier. Just give him more time to process it maybe. But I don't know why he would say your minutes are going to be limited when he's clearly a player who can make an impact for them. Maybe say, you know, I'm not going to go with you for the first game, but I want to see you prove me wrong in training or something like that. You know, maybe light a fire under the player rather than just say, you know, your minutes are going to be limited, and then sort of kill their confidence a little bit. It's a bit of a strange one. But, you know, Berhalter, I don't particularly rate. I don't think he's a particularly good sort of man manager for that reason. And, you know, he was okay tactically. He set that team up fairly well. But I think it's a, you know, the US is now a very, you know, talented national team. I think a lot of that work has been done by other national federations as well, because there's a lot of players who have had their educations elsewhere. US soccer does seem like a quite fragmented organization without a real sort of blueprint, which is, it's tough in a country of that size to really coordinate something like that. But yeah, I mean, it's just a strange situation all round. And I like Reyna. Hopefully he can go back to Dortmund and have a good season, because I think he's a good player. And hopefully, you know, the next time the World Cup rolls around, he's going to be a more mature player as well. So hopefully he can be a big part of the next one on home soil. Because that should be his goal now. Try and put this one in the past and move on from it. Because I think how old is he? He's still only like, what, yeah. So yeah, he's incredibly young. So you've got to manage a player like that differently as well. You can't always expect a 19-year-old to
listen. You can't snitch on a 19-year-old, bro.
And yeah. Also, why would he even hold it against him? Like, a 19-year-old was upset. That, first of all, is the idiotic thing to say to somebody at the beginning of a World Cup that your minutes are going to be limited. Mm. Like, you know, you as a manager, you have every right to pick your 11, you pick your bench, and just roll with it. why make like literally shut the door on the guy after you've picked him? Why did you pick him? Like, this is the same thing we were talking earlier about Fabinho in Brazil, right? You picked him, so obviously you think he's of some value. And then why would you, before a World Cup, say something like that? And then you don't expect that a 19-year-old would have some emotions about that? Like, that's just crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just don't bring it up after. Yeah. I don't know what the full context is, but it's not a good look. Like, it makes players question if they're in a safe place with this guy going further in the future. Like, now Berhalter has to, like, apologize to all the players and say, all right, something like this will never happen again. I overstepped. And he has to get their confidence back to get them to give him their full, undivided efforts. So, yeah, this is a learning moment for not just the player, but the coach too.
I wish Berhalter good luck for his upcoming appearance at the Lack of Leadership Summit.
Oh, he's got another one coming up.
He needs to go to the Lack of Leadership Summit. He needs to get Lack of Leadership.
Hilarious. Because that's what he's proving right now.
Yeah.
Anything else you guys want to cover before tomorrow, 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, Croatia versus Argentina pops off and maybe we get an upset. Maybe not.
No, I'm looking forward to these games. I think they're going to be big occasions. It'll be interesting to see who steps up. Like you say, we've got underdogs, we've got favourites, we've got some of the best players in the world still left in this tournament, despite the fact there's been so many upsets. We've still got Mbappe, we've still got Messi and Mbappe. And there's a potential for new heroes to be crowned, you know. Could it be a Ziyech? Could it be Perisic or Modric or, these guys to cement themselves, you know. I'm just really looking forward to it. These are going to be big occasions, and you know, may the best teams make the final.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting tomorrow. Go ahead, Neil. You got anything?
I think the whole Messi thing. I think you can kind of feel it. Like even when you're going through Twitter, you listen to all the commentators talking about it. It kind of feels like. It would probably be the same if either Ronaldo or Neymar was still around. But, you know, let's see if he can get to the final and then what happens. Like a France versus Argentina final would be really pleasing to see. But, you know, Morocco could be the first African team. You know, they're already the first African team in the last four. Taking those two few extra steps would be... It kind of looked like it is never going to happen. Because you know, you haven't seen a consistent uptick in the performance of African teams, World Cup over World Cup. But you know, they're two games away from winning it all. As it's just you know, at this level, anything can really happen. All other, even though I'm a big fan of XG, XG kind of goes out of the window right at this very moment. So. Even Croatia, you know, they can control games and they can do anything. So yeah, just hoping for two good games, hoping for 15 minute stoppage times. Let's go. Yes. Let's yes. Not have any games. Let's have like 3 hour games.
3 hour games. Yeah. 100%. And, Messi, I love you, but it might not happen, man. I love you, but I still think you're one of the best ever, if not the best ever. You know, I still think that 100%. And yeah, man, let's not sleep on Modric. Luka Modric could be the most talented underdog in football history if he makes it to the finals and wins. And then there's some matchups that are repeats. Like if Croatia makes it, and France makes it, that's a repeat, like you guys said, of the last final. If Argentina makes it and if France makes it, that's a matchup from the last World Cup also, where France knocked Messi out of the World Cup when Mbappe like grabbed the cameras and put it on himself and said, forget that Argentinian guy. I'm this kid and I'm on the stage and there's nobody that could stay with me on this soccer field. And I showed it to you today. And that's when Pavard scored. So then there's that rematch also. And then if Morocco gets in there, it's just a whole new ball game of how the hell did this team of people that like nobody expected to be there get there, and that's going to be amazing. And the you're going to find out how many Moroccan people are in every country in the world if they get to the World Cup, because you're going to go on YouTube and see celebrations in places. Like all the celebrations in other countries were bigger than the ones in Morocco. That's how many Moroccan people are all over the world in different places. I was like, there's more Moroccan people outside of Morocco than in Morocco. It's crazy.
I've got a Moroccan friend who doesn't care about football. I'm like, you better start caring. Yeah, I'm like, you better start caring. Yeah.
Yeah.
If there's ever time for him to care. We did what?
He said, we did what? That's amazing.
Yeah, these are the guys who are going to have kids who for the 2046 World Cup.
Yeah.
Moroccan team.
The thing is that
when his son is playing for Morocco, in 20 years, he'll go back.
I think he's the only Moroccan who doesn't care about football, though. Like, I've been to Morocco and they're crazy about it. Like, everywhere I went in Morocco, there were kids playing football on the street. I saw a couple of games out there. Like, it's a football crazy country. So I think my friend is the only Moroccan who doesn't give a shit about football.
Hilarious.
I'm just Googling Moroccan restaurant San Diego.
Why don't you just wait till you hear the sound tomorrow?
Neil's going to order out some tagine.
No, I want to see if somebody's open tomorrow in the morning, you know? Tomorrow's Argentina, Croatia, right?
Yeah, Wednesday is.
Yeah.
But all right, guys. Thanks for joining once again. Thanks everybody for listening. Oh yeah, I have a show. I got two shows. I got one in the Coachella Valley, December 15th. I think this Thursday. Go to my Instagram at Ian Edwards Comic and you can see the flyer for that. And I think I know I'm going to be on January 13th and 14th at the Creek in the Cave in Austin. So let me just start advertising that from now and be a good, decent business person to myself. Let's try to get some people to come out and see some standard. But everybody else, man, enjoy the games. We love you. And one. So,